This is WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo. Purdue University Press has published a new book, Cheerio and Best Wishes, Letters from a World War II Hoosier Pilot. The authors are the father and son team of Ralph and Donald Schneck. The book tells the story of Ralph's service in the military through letters he wrote to family back in Indiana. Ralph and Don are here with me to talk about the book. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Let's start about where the idea for the book came from. And I don't know, Don, if you want to go first.
I discovered these letters in the bottom of a cardboard box shortly after I was helping my dad move into an apartment. I didn't know exactly what I had until I started reading them. The story that unfolded was so incredible that I thought somebody needed to tell it because it's a behind-the-scenes story, and it's not the typical kind of thing you would read in letters from World War II, which typically focus on the war itself and that kind of thing. This one talks about what life was like and how the boys got trained and how they prepared to go to war, the daily grind in between flying combat missions and that kind of thing. And I thought it was so unique that it really needed to be told.
So did you then approach your father about this,
or
what was the idea?
No, I didn't. I went ahead and wrote it, not knowing whether or not it would ever be published or not. After I had finished it and before I had submitted it to Purdue Press, he came up to Lafayette to see our new home. He lives in Texas. And we were sitting around before dinner one night, and I happened to mention to him that I had written a book, and I told him what it was about, and he said, well, that sounds a lot like my story. And I said, well, it is your story, and I'm glad to hear that you like it because I'm hoping to get it published. And he said, that's real fine. So that was the first time he had heard about it. And when he smiled, then I knew I had the go-ahead to try and get it published.
Ralph, what did you think about that?
When I first heard it, I thought it was kind of unique, you know, and that's the reason I said, well, gee, I used to write letters, you know. But I thought it was real nice. I was a little bit leery about the publishing of a book because, you know, that's quite an honor to have a book published about you. But I thought it was pretty good.
How did it come that you kept these letters for decades?
First of all, the war came along. I was born in 1919, and when the war came along, I wanted to fly an airplane because as a young boy, I'd seen this airplane fly over our farmhouse. So the war came along, and I got the opportunity to enlist in the aviation cadet, and they accepted me. And when I left home, I told my mother and father that if I ever got to travel, and I suspected I would, but if I ever got to travel, I would write them a letter and tell them what it's like to be outside of Posey County, Indiana. Because, you see, they lived there all their life, never been anywhere except to Evansville, which was 15 miles away. But I found out when I got in the military that there was really nothing to do at night. You went to work, you ate dinner, and you got ready for bed. And there was a period of time in there where you didn't have anything to do. But I remembered that I promised my mother I'd write a letter. So I did, I started writing letters, and I just kept it up. That's about all you can say for it.
Were you surprised that they had kept them?
After the war, I came home, and my mother dug these out of a box and said, looky here. And here was all these letters. And I thought, my goodness, why in the world did you ever save those? And I was really surprised.
What I liked about the book is that it's an easy read. It's very conversational because it's basically letters from home.
Right.
But was it a challenge putting this together, Don, and sorting through these letters and getting it in a timeline?
Yes and no. Getting them in the timeline wasn't really any problem. I transcribed them one at a time. They weren't in any order when I transcribed them. So when I pieced them together to go into the book, it was very easy to get them into the right order. The biggest challenge in transcribing them, however, was that at the time, Dad wasn't the greatest speller in the world. And I wanted to make sure that the letters got transcribed exactly as they were written. So I had to I tried to type them exactly as the words were spelled out, and that's very time-consuming when you try to do that. It also has a lot of colloquialisms in it, phrases that we don't use anymore. So sometimes I would stumble through some of that. But that was the biggest challenge in transcribing. The order wasn't really any very difficult at all.
Talk about the pitch to Purdue Press. Are they the one and only?
One and only.
So what was the pitch like with the folks
there?
Well,
I did some research. I was looking around for a publisher. And since I am a Purdue grad and I get the Purdue Alumnus magazine, I had seen where the Purdue Press was soliciting manuscripts. And I didn't really know much about them. So I did some research and discovered that they had a specific niche that they were going after. And part of that niche was anything that related to history of Indiana. And this book does contain a little bit of history, especially of southern Indiana. And so I thought, well, that might be part of the equation. They also were looking for manuscripts that dealt with the history of aviation. And this, I felt, was an integral part of the history of aviation. So I thought, why not? I'll give them a shot and see what happens. They have a form you fill out, and I filled it out exactly the way they asked for it. And I think I wrote a pretty decent synopsis of the book. And it helped that the book was completed. I think a lot of people submit a request for publication, and they haven't finished the work, and so they can't write a complete synopsis. But I did, and I submitted it. And they picked up on it right away and ran with it.
And not only is your life being documented in this book, Ralph, but the letters and some other memorabilia you've donated to the Baron Hilton Flight Archives here at Purdue?
Yes.
Was that a hard decision to make, to part with that and not give it to a family? Or?
Well, I don't know. Hard to answer that.
Well, they will be preserved, I guess.
Yes, they will. And they took my picture albums.
Okay.
And I asked the girl there that if later on, could I go in and look at some of the pictures? I might want to do that, you know. And she said that eventually they thought they would put those on the internet so that you could go in and thumb through the album picture at a time. I think that would be real fine.
Yeah, they've got a great digital archive system
yes.
there. One thing I want to indulge in, if you would, talk about your relationship with Jimmy Stewart, the actor.
Well, actually, it was rather unique. After I graduated from flying school, I and two of my friends were selected to go to Mather Field in Sacramento to be an instructor, which was kind of an honor, so to speak. And my friend and I were in the BOQ one Sunday, and they have a telephone there hanging in the wall. Well, that telephone kept ringing and ringing and ringing, and I told my friend who was trying to write a letter, I said, if that thing starts ringing again, I'm going to go over and answer it. So it did. And I went out in the hall, and I answered the phone, and there was some sweet young girl on there and says, I want to speak to Jimmy. And I says, Jimmy who? And she says, I want to speak to Jimmy Stewart. And I says, oh, he's in Hollywood. This is Sacramento. There's no Jimmy Stewart here. And she says, well, I talked to him here yesterday, and he said for me to call him, but he also said that he might be asleep, and whoever answered the phone should yell real loud. So I held the phone out, and I said, hey, Jimmy Stewart. And sure enough, about 15 seconds later, the door right by the telephone opened up, and it was Jimmy Stewart, and he says, that's for me. And he talked, and after he finished, he came into our room and talked with us, and he told us he'd been trying to get into aviation cadet, but that he was over 30 years old, and that was too old. But they also told him that if he learned to fly himself and came in and passed all the things and so forth, why, they would accept him. He also had to make a couple of publicity short films for the Air Force. So I didn't expect to see him anymore. And when I got to Boise, Idaho, to learn to fly the B-24, I got in there on a Sunday afternoon, and boy on the desk says, "Hey, I've got a message for you." And he handed me this, and he said, "If you get here before 4 o'clock, come down to the operations building." Well, it was about 2, so I walked down to the opera, and there was Jimmy Stewart sitting there reading a tech order. And he had seen my name as coming in to Boise, and he recognized it. That's the reason I got to see him again. We actually were both in the 445th bomb group, but he was assigned to fly with another squadron, not in the same squadron that I did. So I didn't get to see him a whole lot, but we were in the same group over there.
And you kept touch, I guess, over the
years.
And
we kept in touch with him. And he came later on when the Doolittle Raiders had their reunion at Wright-Patterson. He came there as a featured speaker, and I got to visit with him. He remembered me, and I remembered him. And so I know him pretty well.
Don, what do you hope people take away after reading the book? What do you want them to get out of it?
Well, I think the main thing is that there was a lot more to the war than just sending a bunch of people over to fight. This book gets into the logistics of how people got to the front, for example. And it wasn't an easy task. And there's a lot of side stories that go along with trying to just establish the ability to get places. And a lot of people don't realize that. And you talk about the B-24 and the B-17, and they were sent to England. A lot of people believe they just took off from the United States and landed in London. And it wasn't that way. We didn't own an airplane. In fact, there were no airplanes in the world that could fly from the United States to England nonstop. They had to make many, many stops along the way. And that's a logistics nightmare. And this war was very unique. We'll never fight another one like it. And I hope people read this and come away with the perspective that it was far, far more complicated and complex than credit has been given so far.
Something that it reinforced, I guess, for me was that these people fighting in the war were farm boys, factory workers.
That's right.
And that they went from the farm in Indiana to flying and instructing and fighting.
Yes, they did.
Yep. And they all had several things in common before the war started. They had all been through the Depression. They had been through feast and famine with the drought in the Plain States. They had all been through Prohibition. All these guys, even no matter where they came from, they all shared some common experience that had happened in their life. And I think that helped bring them all together.
Your high school graduating class motto.
Yeah.
I don't want to get it wrong, but basically life is what you make of it, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And you really had to overcome some odds.
I didn't want to be a foot soldier. We had two or three people in the little town where I lived that had been in World War I as a foot soldier, and they had all sorts of tales about carrying backpacks and sloshing through mud and living in a tent on the ground and all this sort of thing. And I had talked to my mother several times, and I said, "Look, Mom, that doesn't appeal to me at all." So when I decided to fly, be a flyer, I thought that was the best I could do.
Congratulations on the book. It's really a great read.
Thank you very much.
It's Cheerio and Best Wishes, Letters from a World War II Hoosier Pilot from Purdue University Press. More information is online at thepress.purdue.edu. Ralph and Don Schneck, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're listening to WBAA. I'm Mike Lowitzo.